What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John, we are 2 weeks into 2021, and feels just like 2020 to me, but hopefully we can talk about some wrestling and kind of have a good time here. You know, I was looking at just kind of what we've been doing of late. And I noticed that in this feed, our Blue Wire feed, and we love Blue Wire. Blue Wire is the network that we are on. I haven't been posting as much on this feed because we've been focusing so much on the Patreon. But I want to let folks who listen to this feed and maybe don't listen to the Patreon stuff know that I do have other shows in mind. We're not going to have multiple shows every week, but I do have some ideas for the next couple of weeks. Next week, we'll have a UFC preview for the Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier fight. We'll bring on a few different folks for that preview, which should be fun. And then the following week, I think we'll have a Royal Rumble preview with a lot of folks who we work with on the network, and then also who I work with closely on Blue Wire. And, you know, I'm kind of trying to bring back a second show on some of the weeks. I think I mentioned last week, I'm trying to get Kevin Kelly on. He's agreed to come on. We just have to sort of figure out a time. And that'll be in this feed as well. But just, you know, I know that last summer, especially, we were like putting a lot of stuff in this feed. And that was just kind of trying to test, you know, how much is too much? What would people listen to? How do we get our downloads up? And because, you know, the pandemic happened and you would think that probably predictably that downloads would be a little bit harder to come by because of the lack of commutes for everybody just sort of being in the house. I don't know what your podcast listening like consistency went to, but like I have a hard time even getting through like my, you know, very minimum number of shows that I have to get through, let alone like all the other ones I wish I could get through.
I don't listen to that many. So at home, I kind of working from home, it's easier, kind of easier for me to listen to podcasts because I could just put it on here while I'm working and, you know, have it on while I'm doing my thing. And if, you know, if I get a phone call or something like that, I just hit pause and, you know, handle business. But yeah, to me, it's been easier. I've been listening to full shows faster than before. I kind of would break it up on my drives or break times or lunch hour.
So what happened, and I haven't really studied this closely, I'm just kind of looking at general numbers, is I think what happened is right when the pandemic started, listens were actually fine. And then over the summer, once we got deeper into the pandemic, we were home a lot longer than we thought. They kind of ticked down a little bit, at least for our show or our feed. And so then, you know, Patreon, we were putting in a lot of time into that. We kind of got that launched. And now it looks like per show listens are slightly upticking, which is really cool. And so, we're going to don't worry. We will have more cool things in this feed as well. More interviews, some podcasts that may debut on the Patreon, and then we kind of pull them over here. You know, the Patreon will get the early access, but they're still going to be really good shows that may not even be super timely and will totally be fine to come over to this channel. You know, we mentioned the Karate Kid podcast that will also debut in the Patreon, but it'll be in this feed, you know, soon thereafter, maybe a couple months after it debuts in the Patreon. Our book club shows with we did one with Brian Alvarez that we put in this feed. We're going to do one with Dave Meltzer that we will put on the Patreon first as well. But, you know, in a week or two, we'll put that on this feed. So there's still going to be tons of fun stuff. It was just sort of a little bit of a juggling experiment for me to kind of figure out what I wanted to put on the Patreon, what I wanted to put on this feed, because this feed is very valuable to us. A, we've been doing this thing with Blue Wire for over a year now. And B, you know, this is where you can reach the most people. Like, there's going to be way more people who listen to this show than a single Patreon show because, you know, that's a subscriber show. That's like a smaller number of listeners compared to something like a free show that is just out there in the ether. So we're going to double down on this feed and keep the Patreon stuff going. I figured out a better balance. I've unlocked the puzzle of having both. So it'll be much better coming up. And some of you may be just fine with one show, and that's totally fine too. Where I don't put these shows in the feed and go, you have to listen to everything because then you don't love us. Like, absolutely not that. You should pick and choose things to listen to and things not to listen to, because your time is super valuable. We don't want to waste your time. We want to, you know, have a good time with you. So, so one thing I wanted to mention, and I put this on Twitter. We mentioned it on last week's show. We wanted to do a giveaway with Jim Valley's new T-shirt that is on PWTs. And we did that today. The winner, and thanks to everyone who kind of jumped on and replied and joined the giveaway, the winner is 919_Falcoholic. He won, and he sent me his information, so we'll get that shirt out hopefully tomorrow. But congrats to, I think his name is Mr. Green, so congrats to Mr. Green for the shirt. Hopefully you enjoy it. You know, Jim, he's such an inspiration to folks who know him, and it's, you know, I want to give away more shirts for Jim. Like, so, you know, we'll think of other things to support Jim, support a lot of the folks who come on here, like, you know, who help us out, like Big Dave. We did the giveaway with his books, and we're gonna do something with JD's books at some point. I gotta talk to him about that to see exactly what he wants to do. But yeah, we'll keep doing it. So all right, so before we get to these shows, I was kind of just thinking, are you in a mode of these Wednesday night shows? We were so excited, you know, in September of 2019, and it was fresh, and it was like, we're going to be in on the ground floor of these shows. Come January 2021, what is your feeling on Wednesday night wrestling? Are you still excited come Wednesday because you know we're going to talk about it? Or has it lost a little luster, you know, now a year and 3 or 4 months in?
No, I'm still pretty pumped for Wednesdays because I know we're going to cover it the next night and for our show. And I enjoy discussing these shows with you. So to me, I get pumped up to see what they're going to do. And the wackiness they come out with us, and then some great matches. And, you know, it's just so much fun to talk about it. It could be frustrating in some ways and then great on other ways. So no, I still enjoy Wednesday. I get excited when I know, oh, it's Wednesday. Cool. I know exactly what I'm doing tonight. I'm watching, you know, both shows, and you know, that's, I'm cool. It's not like, you know, first off, of course, you know, like, you know, everything kind of runs its course, but like I said, I'm still excited for Wednesdays when it turns the time, when I wake up on Wednesdays, I'm like, yeah, pretty pumped.
And the reason why I ask this is because a guy in our Facebook group, his name is Kevin. I think you pronounce his last name Eli. It might be Ellie. I think it's Eli. But he kind of raised an interesting point, which was post Wrestle Kingdom, that felt so important and so exciting and so monumental to him that he hasn't looked as forward to the Wednesday stuff. And I started to think, you know, usually at this time for me as a wrestling fan, like Royal Rumble's coming, you know, and it's usually my favorite. It's my favorite event because usually stuff happens, kicks off, you know, stuff happens for WrestleMania. But I don't feel the same way necessarily as he does, but I understand it because A, there's so many things to watch, and B, I feel like WWE, at least in the US, kind of stirs the drink for all of wrestling. And when they don't feel hot, I almost wonder if, you know, a lot of wrestling in general doesn't feel exciting, because usually, again, like I said, because of Royal Rumble around this time, I'm so jazzed up for the Royal Rumble. And right now I'm just kind of going like, do I even want to pay attention to Raw and SmackDown for the next couple weeks before the Royal Rumble. I don't know. Like, there's just this weird malaise, and it could simply be the pandemic and just kind of being sick of the pandemic too. But I don't know. I just felt like this weird thing of where I'm just not feeling the Rumble coming up, the way that they're just saying, like, you know, who's putting their, you know, their hat into the Rumble. Like, it just I don't know. There's just something about this time that I know that I would normally be jazzed, that I'm just not super jazzed right now.
Yeah, it's because of the pandemic. Like, I'm like you. I like the Royal Rumble a lot. It's always one of my favorite events of the year. And just, I mean, just in the back of my mind, I went, oh, the Rumble's coming up. Cool. But then I think, oh, it's going to be, you know, with no fans, with the big Thunderdome screen. So that's what I kind of go back to.
That might be it.
Doesn't really pump me up as much. And what real surprises could they have? What real direction are we really going to see? Like, I just can't imagine WrestleMania having major surprises, you know, like from big matches, because nothing feels fresh, right? Mm-hmm. Unless they, I mean, they already did Drew versus Roman Reigns at Survivor Series. So unless they can figure out a way to make that special, if that's the way to go, or, you know, I still think it's going to be Big E and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I think that's going to be a big match. So will it be special for me now? I mean, it'd be cool. I mean, happy for Big E if he gets that spot, because, you know, he's worked hard and he's doing a really great job, you know, on his own right now, and they're pushing him. So, but is it like, oh my God, I can't wait to WrestleMania if that happens? No, you know, so there's nothing. Brock Lesnar even coming back won't even, you know, get me excited about anything. So it's whatever. This year again is like, I'm feeling 2021, it feels like 2020 to me. I'm just like, whatever when it comes to the main roster stuff. I'll watch some of it. I'll pick and choose my spots, but the other stuff, you know, NXT is still, you know, and AEW, you know, like covering the Wednesday shows is fine for me.
Now, how do you feel about the NFL? Like, the NFL just had 6 playoff games over last weekend. They have 4 more this weekend, and then the Super Bowl is coming in like 3 or 4 weeks. Like, does it feel, do you feel the same way about the NFL as far as, you know, we're in a pandemic and there's no fans? And so,
I feel exactly. Like, I didn't watch one playoff game this past weekend, and usually I watch majority of them.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I know I was busy that week, last weekend, and just with the kids and stuff, but like at the same time, I was just like, oh yeah, there are there are playoff games on right now. Mm-hmm. And, but I wasn't like, oh, rushing to watch them. I'd rather go outside, play with the kids and, you know, do stuff like that than that. So yeah, it's just, even the Super Bowl coming up, I'm not really like super excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more excited probably about the commercials this year than the game. Like, just to see if there's what new trailers are going to come out for some movies in 2021, but which I won't be able to see in the theater. I'll have to just watch it at home.
By the way, Wonder Woman 84, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Oh, I liked it.
Did you?
Good. Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
I only heard negative reviews, so I haven't watched it. And the if it was a negative review movie, and it was like an hour and a half, I would have totally watched it, but it's like almost 3 hours and I have to like mentally prepare myself. So if there's nothing else that I absolutely want to watch, then I'll put it on. But I have a feeling that I'll have so many other things that I want to watch.
Yeah, I watched it. It went by pretty fast for me. I thought everyone was pretty good at it. So, I mean, it was fun. It's just a fun film. Nothing, you know, and that's not going to win an Oscar or anything, but, you know, just, I mean, you can't think too hard about those kind of movies.
Yeah. Yeah. No. All right. So quickly, before we move on to our reviews, want to quickly talk about one of our sponsors. Well, actually, not even. This is not a sponsor necessarily, but I'm going to do a read about a program that I'm even involved in, which is really cool, called Blue Wire Hustle. So, Blue Wire Hustle. Think about if you want to do a show, kind of like what John and I are doing, just two people chatting it up. Like the question is, how do you start that kind of thing, right? And it is a little daunting, especially in the beginning, because you're like, how do I do this? Where do I get hosted? All of those things. So Blue Wire Hustle is a program that sort of allows you to either get going or like take what you've done in the beginning and sort of take it to the next level. You'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters. They haven't invited me yet. Access to our access to the community Discord and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. On top of that, and this is really what I think from a technological standpoint, what is a little intimidating when you think about podcasting. Blue Wire Hustle will help you get your shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other platforms. And the best part, it's just $15 a month. So you get the hosting, which is generally about that price, plus everything else that that we just mentioned. And the I think the best thing about Hustle is just the community. Like it said, there's a Discord and you have a lot of people who are sort of in the same shoes of early growth and trying to figure out how to do this thing. And so you're sort of, you know, like-minded, like no one's the rock star. And then you have like you feel like you're the low person on the totem pole. So acceptances to the program is limited. So you'll want to throw your hat in there today. If you are interested, go to bwhustle.com/join and check out the you'll have the link in our show in your player. I'll put the link there. bwhustle.com/join. Also, you know, part of our Patreon is the highest tier where you get everything is also kind of one-on-one time with me as far as how to do this stuff. When it comes to the podcasting stuff, when it comes to the tech, when it comes to the mics, when it comes to the hosting, if you're with BW Hustle, they'll have that covered for you. When it comes to what recording software to use, when it comes to how to start your own website, when it comes to using Google Business to create your own email, like all that kind of stuff. If you subscribe in our highest tier on the Patreon, I will basically hold your hand through anything you want when it comes to that stuff. So, all right, let's get into these two shows on Wednesday night. And I thought about, I was like, let's start with NXT. And the reason why I want to start with NXT is because generally, at least to me, NXT is just the more consistent show than AEW. It's less up and down. AEW can be up and down from a quality standpoint, at least personally, but the energy is usually up, and the energy on the AEW show was up tonight too. But I kind of wanted to start with NXT because I had a conversation with somebody. Again, I'll shout out to our podcast group, Fight Game Podcast Facebook group, Scott Young, who he and I have had some interesting back and forth before, but and basically we disagree on a lot of stuff, but he's a super nice guy. And he was mentioning NXT and he had this comment. He said, NXT was really good. It's a shame more people aren't watching. And that's kind of what we say every week, which is this show is pretty good. It still has the, you know, that young upstart kind of energy. I think sometimes there's a little bit too much, you know, a little bit too much WWE sometimes, and others not at all. And so this is their restart show. They had the big show, the big show last week, and now they're kind of like, let's, you know, a month until the takeover. So I saw this as like a new kickoff of whatever the new angles were and whatever, wherever they're going for the takeover. So I wanted to start with this show first. And I will say, this is going to be for both shows. I was like, in the middle, and I've been saying this a lot, I was in the middle on a lot of it, and I didn't really dislike a ton on either show because I was in the middle on what I would probably dislike because I did like a sliver or a piece of something. So most of my comments are going to be positive, but I'm sure you'll have some negative comments, and then I can add my thoughts on why I didn't put it on my dislike list, because I think both shows had a couple of things like that. So I want to kick off the likes with NXT. Now, to me, I thought the best thing on both shows is what I would consider the main event angle. And it was in two segments. You had Finn Balor come out. To me, he's just like the perfect champion. He looks like a badass. He looks like a star. He's got really great delivery on his promos. And then, you know, he's interrupted by the bad guys, and then stuff happens, and then the Undisputed Era comes out, and then there's this like interesting, like the fans are like, oh shoot, Undisputed Era, Adam Cole kind of saved Finn Balor a little bit, and then Finn doesn't really realize it, and they don't really realize it, and then they look at each other, and then they realize it. Like, that thing in wrestling always kind of works for me, so I really enjoyed that. And then the main event, which was Undisputed Era versus Breezango, the match was fine, but the angle at the end... Now, I think if you have one qualm about the show, is that there was just a lot of run-ins on this show, but this felt... it felt like a really strong way to go off TV, where you have all the main guys kind of attacking each other. It's so funny because we're talking about 97 Raw, and on our Patreon show on Monday, we're going to talk about an episode of 97 Raw where it's literally like all the top guys fighting each other. And in here, I was just like, I want to see Pete Dunne. I want to see O'Reilly and what's going on with his jaw. I want to see Adam Cole. I want to see Roddy. I want to see Finn. Like, all those guys are over to me. And they closed with the angle of, you know, them hitting, I think it was Pete Dunne hitting Kyle in the jaw. UE wins their match. Finn is involved. It just felt hot to go off the air. And I really liked that. The whole thing, the whole two segments of that stuff.
Yeah, I agree. That was my one and two likes. I liked the promo that Finn Balor did, and I liked the interruption from the heels, and, you know, predictable, but, you know, they kind of set it up when they showed the brand walk into the building right before Finn's coming out for his interview. And I liked the tease of Undisputed Era coming out helping Finn, and now they got a new storyline going. That's what that's what the show is all about. It's about, you know, starting things up again and working your way to TakeOver. And it looks like we're gonna get Finn Balor versus Pete Dunne at TakeOver.
Be awesome.
Which will be an awesome main event. So I like the angle too at the end of the show. I thought it was a great bookend to what they started in segment two, I think it was, with Balor promo. Really strong, taking out O'Reilly, takes him off TV for a while. So now you have Pete Dunne focus on Finn Balor. So that sets that up.
And Balor was the one who brought the attention that, hey, you know, he's the one drinking through a straw right now.
Yeah.
Not me.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. It was great. All that stuff was really well done. And I thought the match, too, I thought the main event was pretty good. I saw the ratings. It was exactly what I expected from this show because there was no real big, like, marquee matchup on this show. You know, the Dusty Classic tag matches, I don't think it's really gonna wet a lot of people's whistle, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I gotta watch it. And, you know, but it was a solid main event. I thought the finish could have been done a little different. I'm not a big fan of, like, when a guy comes off top rope for, like, say, an elbow or a leg drop like Fandango did here, and he gets caught with, like, a drop kick or a super kick, because he has to take it to where he's looked like he's just jumping into it, you know? Mm-hmm. I thought he should have just had him down, Adam Cole down the ground, go for the big leg drop, miss, bumps on his butt, boom. Adam Cole gets on his feet, last shot, back of the head, 1, 2, 3. Like, to me, I thought that would have been better. I mean, yeah, it looks cool when you super kick someone as you jump on the top rope, but, like, visually, it's like, I don't believe you're really doing that body movement because you're going for your leg drop, you know? I don't know. Just that's just a little nitpicky, but that's how I felt. But I thought the tag match was a good main event. It just, you know, but the whole thing was about the angle, and they did a really good job.
So my second thing And I think you split those. I had those as one. Mm-hmm. My second thing is the way that they introduced MSK. I don't know what, they didn't build them up, right? They didn't build them up for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, but putting them in as like the secret team on the Dusty Rhodes Classic was intriguing. I sort of figured out who they were, but only because, so I was like, oh, MSK, interesting. I wonder who they are. And then I saw something on Twitter that I didn't even put together as MSK. And then finally, before the match started, I was like, "Oh, that's what I was reading about was the Rascals. They're going to come in." But it made it feel really fun, like you mentioned earlier. You know, there's not a lot of surprises in wrestling right now, and I thought that was a nice little one. You know, again, they didn't build them up for months and months and months, but at the same time, when they debuted or when they showed up, I was like, "Oh, great!" Because I really want to see these guys on this show. I'm only adding MSK to my likes because there's a part of this that I don't like, which is the Swerve and Atlas partners who don't like each other stuff. I think it's a really, unless it's done really well, I think it's a really tired trope in wrestling. I don't think Swerve and Atlas, I don't think their personalities are there yet on TV to where they could actually pull this off. It just seems like two whiny crybabies fighting each other, and that's not really what I want to see. So that part of the thing I didn't like, but I really liked MSK. I thought the match was fun. Glad that they're here. Hope that they do well on this tournament. And good to see, you know, a young tag team or just young talent on TV.
I had this on my dislike, and not that I like the way they the booking of it, of, you know, leading up to the show, the surprise team. I figured out pretty quickly when I was trying to figure out who it was, and I remembered the Rascals were signed, and mm-hmm. And who their opponents were. I was kind of figuring out, you know, that's kind of perfect opponents for those guys when it comes to like the All Action. So I'm not hating on the match. The match is the match that, you know, is kind of what you wanted, you know, from those guys. You want to feature them doing all their flashy moves. The only problem with that, though, like Jake Atlas and Swerve Scott also do a lot of flashy moves. Mm-hmm. So it was four guys doing, or two teams doing flashy moves instead of one team kind of standing out, you know. I don't know which is better. I would prefer having, you know, it would have been better if they would have flipped opponents. But I know they already built this up for a week or two with Ever-Rise and the Grizzled Young Veterans having a match. But Ever-Rise would have been a nice little opening match for MSK to kind of, they get to do all their, you know, wild flippy stuff. And, you know, Ever-Rise could be really good bases and catch them and do all their moves and, you know, take all their moves and stuff. And Swerve Scott and Atlas would have been good opponents for the Grizzly Young Veterans. So, but I didn't like how they came out. Like, there's wearing these sweaters that look like they were discounted from the Pacific Sun store back in the day. Like, they didn't look like stars to me. Like, it just looked kind of, not say generic, but, you know, Nash Carter, who's the former Zachary Wentz, like looked really flabby, like skinny fat. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen him before. He's usually in good shape. I don't know.
I wonder if he's got an injury or something.
Got an injury, or he's trying to put some weight on for, I don't know. Maybe he made his injury, but he looked fine. Wesley, formerly Desmond Xavier, he looked good. You know, mm-hmm. he looked good. So, I mean, it's just, it's only on dislike because I felt like they could have done something to look a little more like the presentation of their entrance, like the sweaters. I wasn't really feeling it, but overall the match is fine. You know, it's kind of in the middle of me, but I just kind of like this, just the presentation is what I disliked about it.
I'm actually, now I'm going back to, I'm trying to pull up a photo of what you were talking. Okay, so I see the sweaters. I guess I didn't even really pay attention to the sweaters as much as just looking at their gear. The one thing that stood out,
fine, but they could have had some kind of cool, you know, jacket or something. I don't know, but not not these.
They're like hoodies, right?
There was like hoodies. The Dave Meltzer sweater, the alien wear. That's what it.
Maybe that's what they're going for.
Yeah, they're Dave Meltzer's new favorite tag team, MSK.
Yeah, that's the way to do it there. So a lot of stuff in the middle, like I said to me, and I'm sure you'll have more likes and dislikes, but I'll get my one dislike out of the way, and it actually relates to all the craziness in the main event, which is the Dexter Lumis and Johnny Gargano match. In of itself, it was sort of benign to me. I didn't hate it, didn't like it. I liked Shotzi and Candice a little bit more, but all the interference and all the sort of the Gargano way and all that stuff, I don't know if I can take two on the same show. Like, I could probably be okay with one, two on the same show, and then when you get so much interference at the end, you're just sort of like, your eyes are blurred out from, you know, from bleary eyed from so much interference on this show. I'd rather see Johnny Gargano wrestle somebody else, really, honestly. And Shotzi and Candice is fine. Like, I think Shotzi's a really good baby face, but I just don't need to see sort of the same kind of thing two times in separate hours on the same show.
They're trying to establish the way, and they have 4 weeks to take over. So I could, I agree. They crammed a little too much of the interference in one show. Obviously, I actually liked the Gargano Dexter Lumis match. I had it in my like, I thought the match was good. I thought they worked really well together. I thought the finish was a bit overbooked and mistimed, like the whole Dexter locking on his silencer, the head and arm choke, and then, you know, suplexing him over into the ring, and then Gargano just getting a roll up. I wasn't too hot into that, but I did like how this kind of sets up, led into Kushida coming out and, you know, saving the day there, and set, you know, continue to set up him versus Gargano, which is going to be a tremendous match. And I like that, you know, gives like Dexter Lumis and Austin Theory a program to work. It might be a short program, might be a match next week, or it could be something, you know, longer. I just hope it's not, you know, Dexter Lumis versus Cameron Grimes part two, where Austin Theory's just creeped out about, you know, Dexter Lumis. Or he could be awesome. He could be opposite. He could think he's cool because he liked his drawings, you know, like, I don't know. But, we'll see what they go. But I kind of like how it set up two things. I like that kind of stuff. But the finish, I thought, was a little bit overbooked. But the match itself, the body of it, I thought was good.
All right. Give me the rest of what's on your list.
For dislikes, I have two more. I did not like Shotzi and Candice. Just the pace of this match was like, it like stayed in one gear the whole match. Like, I mean, I'm sure, you know, during the heat was during the break, which is the picture in picture, which I fast forward. You know, it wasn't really.
There was
watching.
One match that did something during the break. It may have been on AEW. Oh, it was during the Darby match. Oh. During the break,
yeah.
Brian Cage is about to throw up the double biceps, and then Darby just like jumped on the back of him and like started choking him. I was like, oh, right. During the picture in picture, restaurant quality.
They do a lot of stuff during the picture in picture, but, you know, I guess the picture in picture is supposed to be, you know, keep your attention, but no, I don't think it's keeping anyone's. I think everyone's fast forwarding.
You know, unless you're watching live.
Unless you're watching live, but, and then the finish looked bad. You know, Indy jumps up, stops her. She knocks off Indy. Right. This allows Candice get back.
And then she gives her head.
Yeah. She just ducks into the neck breaker.
They should have never showed that slow motion.
Ugh. Well, they probably, I don't know if they even, I hope they must have not watched it before they went to it, because it just, okay, here you go. I'm like, oh God. I was like, nah. So
I saw the same thing.
Yeah. I was not a fan of this match. I mean, she's so green, and, you know, that's stuff that she needs to work on, but.
Well, yeah. And hopefully that will come, cause she's got the character down.
Like, oh yeah.
That promo that she did with Ember, where, you know, the words didn't even really matter to me. I was just like, you know, she's very confident when she's in those roles of having to talk. And we saw it on the Halloween thing, you know, when she got to host that show. She's so confident, and hopefully, you know, the wrestling will actually come, because I think if it does, she's got a real good opportunity to be pretty darn good.
yeah, she doesn't hurt herself in the meantime. Mm-hmm. You know, that's but no, she's confident on the mic because she does. She's done television and stuff like that. Like she's not camera shy. She has that little bit of a overacting promo, you know, like you could tell, like it's all written down for her. And unlike where an Adam Cole, he has bullet points and can do, you know, it's just different. She's inexperienced, but
well, compare her and Ember to Caden Carter and
same. About the same.
And
about
Casey.
The same. I mean, it was a little bit the same, you know. I know their promo just kept going. I'm like, all right, we get the picture, you're a team. You're gonna And that's another thing. I didn't put on my likes or dislikes, but I just think cramming both Dusty Classics into one, you know, at the same time is just kind of takes away from both of them.
You know what would have been cool? And I don't know if they could have done this necessarily, but remember they did the Cruiserweight Classic, mm-hmm. and then they did the Mae Young's Classic, and they were like special shows. I wonder if they could have done the Dusty Classic in the women's tournament, and maybe you don't name it after a Dusty, you know, you name it after somebody else. It's the Fabulous Moolah and Judy Martin tag team mm-hmm. classic.
The Glamour Girls,
yeah. But you do it on the network as an exclusive, mm-hmm. you're not going to get as many viewers, obviously, but it does sort of change, like what you said, there's so much happening at once. And, you know, it's going to make the shows kind of similar because you're just going to have nothing but tag team matches on these shows. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. I just think it's like too much, you know, like I'd rather have it split, like, you know, one in the early year, one in the, you know, after WrestleMania or something like that. You know, they can separate the two just to take, you know, it's just, yeah, it'd be a lot of tag matches. You have the girls tag, now you have the men's tags, and well, we'll see how it plays out. But for me, I'm just like, I don't like them crammed together.
Well, we talked about this when they announced it. They got their work cut out for them to actually get 8 really good tag teams, right?
They'll get 8 tag teams. I don't know about
really good, though.
Really good. I mean, they're going to have some job matches. Teams. You're going to have some job teams. Like, I think, was it that new Brazilian, was there Valentina Ferrez who just wrestled?
She the one who lost?
Yeah, she'll probably team with the girl that was Zia Levy last week, the Luchador girl, whatever her name is. I forget. She had the regular name, you know, she wore a mask, like Valerina. Like, she had a full name and she had to wear a mask, like, okay, should she be like a special kind of, like, you know, the Condor or something? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, anyways, so there might be a job team or two, you know, what the hell, you know, but we'll see. I hope they get like maybe someone from the main roster as a team, you know, just to kind of spice things up a little bit too. And they have some, you know, but they haven't announced all 8 teams, right? Have they? I don't think so. They only did a couple.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Anyways, my last dislike was the Tim Thatcher Ciampa face off.
That's interesting because I was really wondering what you thought about this. I didn't necessarily, it wasn't like, because they usually do these things really, really well. And I was just like, okay, this is kind of cool, but it didn't really knock my socks off, and I was wondering what you thought about it.
No, I didn't like it. It's, you know, unlike the Balor and O'Reilly one, which I thought was really good, like, this didn't need this. Ciampa was, like, slouched over. he's like, hands in between his legs, slouched over. And Thatcher just looked massive next to him because he's just standing, sitting up straight and perfect posture. He's mm-hmm. like a giant. And I just rather have these guys just cut 2 promos to the camera. You know, this was just unneeded. And I didn't get any, like, it didn't build any excitement for the fight pit. It felt like 2 guys that kind of mutually respect each other, and well, I don't know why you picked on me. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of weird. It didn't really do anything to build the match for me. I rather just have just 2 straightforward promos, you know, highlights of last year's fight pit to kind of get over the match and what it's all about, and that's it, man. You don't need this. It's just a waste of time.
Yeah. Okay, so this AEW show is going to be pretty interesting because I think there's 2 segments that a lot of people really hated, and I didn't hate them, but I also didn't think that they were very good. And I'll sort of explain what I'm saying if they are on your dislikes list. But we'll start with the likes. I thought the opener was fun. I thought Pac is like a really good opening match wrestler. Kingston, I think, eventually is going to be a really strong fighting babyface. He just connects in a way that a lot of people who are probably actually better wrestlers than him don't really connect. Like, he connects in a very personal way. Love Pac's athleticism. He does crazy out of this world stuff. But I think it's really like Kingston's, the way that he sold, that kind of made the match for me. But yeah, I really thought that this was a fun opener.
Yeah, this match was good. I like this match. This is on my likes list. And I was like, oh, cool, man. Great way to start. I mean, the match itself. The only negative I can say about it is like the post-match when Pac locked on his brutalizer on Eddie. Like, that was not needed. Like, because Pac should have gotten in Eddie's face after he pinned him with that big suplex, and then the Butcher and the Blade could come in and then face off him. Like, they had to wait for Pac to lock on the Brutalizer and then jump in. They just kind of make them look like assholes, like, or, you know, just kind of waiting there.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have done that. And also, like, like, what was up with Lance Archer? Like, he's coming out to go beat up the guy that lost. You know, like, he just comes out. He wants to fight Eddie, and like, Eddie got his ass kicked, right? Or not yet, you know, he lost the match. And then for some weird reason, Archer gets upset with Pac.
Yeah.
And he says audibly on camera, you better get on the same page. Like, yeah, he beat Eddie. What more page do you need to get? Like, I don't think they really knew what to do here with him.
Well, I sort of took it as Pac.
This one.
Well, I took it as Pac has his group.
Mm-hmm.
Archer wants to be a part of a group, but he knows that Pac isn't going to necessarily fall in line, and he's going to be the leader of this thing. And so that's kind of what I took out of it. But I don't know if that's what they meant. I don't know if, like, that's what they were trying to tell, because it seems like we're going to get a match at some point with these guys.
Well, I don't know. I'm as confused as ever after the end of the show with what the Lucha Brothers are going to be doing. I figured we're going to get a 6-man tag with, you know, or something. Archer, I just don't think they know what to do with this guy. I think, you know, I don't know.
He is a hard guy to book for them, though, because he's so much bigger than everybody else.
Yeah, they don't know how to book him. And he just, like, he should stay in New Japan. They booked him pretty well there. But, like, I just don't understand. Like, I don't know if him wanting to join the group. Like, everyone dies to him. So why does he want to be with the group?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think they're trying to, like, you know, shoehorn people into stuff to kind of keep them on TV, and it's not really hitting. But the match itself, I thought it was really good.
So my second thing was the presentation of Omega and the Good Brothers against the Varsity Blondes and Danny Limelight. I think the good part of the storytelling is everyone sort of figured that Don Callis was going to introduce the Good Brothers instead of the Young Bucks. It kind of makes the Young Bucks look a little goofy. They should have kind of been out ahead of that thing. But the match in of itself, I watch it and I go, oh, wow, like, Omega must like Danny Limelight a lot, because Danny Limelight kind of got to shine here. And I do think that, you know, Omega and the Good Brothers, that story in of itself kind of raises the level of this match from just a normal 6-man tag to something that's pretty important. And if they would have killed these guys, I don't think it would have really mattered. I did like to see Danny Limelight get a little bit of shine, because he's not, you know, he will never be in a bigger match at this point in his career. And so he shines, he looks good, and you kind of keep that in the back of your head. And my guess is that they see something in him and they want to do something with him. I just hope that they have him signed, unlike Ben Carter, so that they can do something with him, because it did seem like, you know, that they were really trying in getting the Omega and the Good Brothers and the Elite and all that thing in getting that over. They also were like, but we can also, let this kid shine at the same time. I thought that was actually kind of cool.
Now this was on my dislikes, and this really frustrated the hell out of me to watch it. And then look, and you're talking about Danny Limelight here. We're not supposed to be talking about Danny Limelight. We're supposed to be talking about Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers,
which is what they beat them, and they beat them fairly convincingly.
They did not beat them fairly convincingly. Fairly convincing is not giving them any offense and destroy these kids.
No, that's a squash. I think they should have squashed them fairly convincingly. Those guys got a little bit of stuff in. Danny Limelight, they took a little shine to him, and he got some he got more than the other guys. But I don't see this as, if it's not a squash, it's a failure. We know that they don't necessarily have squash matches in general. That's just not the way that they
do them every once in a while to get some people over. This is the top heel group. This is the Good Brothers' first match in AEW. They are the invading group, right? Impact. This is your heel group. Like, I don't think they understand how to get any. I don't think none of these guys in this match understood how to get over. I would think Carl Anderson would be smart enough.
But those guys are already over. They were over just showing up on the show, one-upping the Young Bucks.
It's not how you do it. First of all, we all saw it coming, and I thought it was cool. Like, you know, like I knew what was going to come. He's going to, you know, I knew once he said Young Bucks can come out of their own entrance and Kenny will go out first. I knew exactly what he was going to do. He was going to do something where the Good Brothers are going to actually be wrestling. And I was cool with that. That was fine. And then they cut to the back. This is shit. I lost it. They cut to the back of the Young Bucks in a little square screen. The Young Bucks with Tony Khan watching this as the Good Brothers come out. And the Young Bucks are smiling like they just got ribbed. Oh, yeah, ribbed, you know?
Well, that's exactly what I think it was. I don't agree with, like, I think they should have been
pissed,
sort of out ahead of this. I don't know if they should have been pissed. What they thought, this is what I got out of it, is they know Kenny has changed. They know he's become a different person. They wanted Kenny to prove to them fully that he is not with them. And so they were sort of expecting Kenny to kind of screw them in this situation. And when he did, they were just like, yep, okay, now we know. That's what I took out of that.
But then why did they try to help him at the end or try to keep the peace? That's the case.
Well, he's still their friend. He didn't personally sucker punch them or sabotage them or beat their ass, which is probably coming at some point.
Well, I'm sure. I would hope so. God willing, you know, like, to get some fucking heat on these guys. Like, eh. And then Tony Khan is smiling himself.
Yeah, because he's like, yeah, they got us. Like, we're stupid.
Jesus Christ. Really? Come on. You know that was bad. And did you notice at the end he started getting a mean face on?
No, I didn't.
Did you? I think he wasn't supposed to smile. I think he had his arms in his hands. I know he had a boner because, like, he's like super excited about his booking, but, like, you know, he's trying not to hold himself, you know, control. He's trying to flex his little biceps with his arms.
Well, that's what I always think when I see him is.
Yeah.
When I see him, I go, I wonder if he's like trying to flex his biceps a little.
Yeah.
Bit
oh, yeah.
Like,
that's what he does.
That's what I think.
That's what he does. Anyways,
I think, and this is, I'm going to go back to this conversation I had with Mike Tenay about this show, and it even relates to the main event, which is they enjoy doing subtleties where they expect their audience to remember something that happened, or they expect their audience to sort of understand things. And sometimes I think they need to hit you over the goddamn head with a sledgehammer repeatedly so that you get it. And sometimes when they do these subtleties like this, they don't always hit. I don't think Tony Khan and the Young Bucks were like, we need to get super pissed off and hit the ring and
something,
you know,
want to
fight Kenny Omega, because they're telling the story in like this slower way. And I think that that's kind of the way that they do things. In some instances, I do think they need to tell it in a more bombastic way so that the audience absolutely knows. I think they kind of like this gray area sometimes, though, until they finally do it. Like, that's just, that's kind of their thing.
Yeah, wonderful. But like,
we talked about it, right? The whole Adam Page and Kenny Omega split, yeah. Like they were constantly sort of, yeah,
it died out. This will die out too, but it hasn't even started. It hasn't really kicked into gear. Like Don Callis is, you know, this invading guy is freely on the show. You know, you think Tony Khan would try to get rid of him and then, you know, or be upset that he's around. You think more people from the office, I mean, the wrestlers like Cody would be involved or something to spice it up. But no, like these guys they're wrestling job guys, which they go through a match with job guys. They should have beat these guys convincingly. Someone posted on Twitter like, oh, it's just like the Horsemen when the Horsemen would, beat guys. I'm like, no, it's not, because the Horsemen destroyed guys and beat the fuck out of them.
Well, I think they're more so talking Flair. Like Flair was going to let get a punch in or get a reversal in because it gets the fans excited. That's
of course you let them get something in. You let one of the guys do something, but you shut them down quickly. Fucking Luke Gallows, the biggest guy in this match, his first time he's been on this show, takes a backward over the top rope bump for the two job guys. What the hell? It's just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Are you trying to make Danny fucking Limelight? Or are you trying to get these fucking heels over? That's what drives me insane. It does not make any sense. They wasted their freaking time. Great, Danny Limelight. He's a good guy. He's a good talent. He's a good quality guy. They should sign him up, you know? I mean, I'm surprised New Japan didn't kind of lock him up when he's doing New Japan Strong stuff. But, you know, because he looked good there. But, yeah, I mean, don't put Danny Limelight in this match. Put him in a different match if you know you want to feature him. You know, and then Moxie comes out, and didn't he get like hit like multiple times with the barbed wire baseball bat last week? Didn't it was
yeah
it was,
he for hours.
Yeah, fine as a daisy. Come just sprinting out. You know, can't sell a shit. And it's like, and then after there's a 3-on-1 attack by the heels, all of a sudden out comes Pentagon and Rey Fénix, who have no history with Moxley. Pac doesn't come out. He must not have given a shit about this, I guess. I don't guess he didn't want to be involved, which makes sense.
There's one possible connection with Moxley and the Lucha Brothers, which is Moxley said something to the effect of last week when he did his comeback interview. I could come in and demand a rematch or whatever, but Fénix has got to have his match. I respect that. He should have his match, blah, 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 blah. That is the one possible connection to them coming out. And I'm sure, at least hopefully, it'll get explained at, you know, on the next interview that they do.
You know who should have came out was Pac, because he does have a connection with both these guys. He wrestled them early on. He could say he doesn't like Moxie, but at least he respects him, but he doesn't respect that damn Kenny Omega, and that's why he's out here. And then the Young Bucks come out and they're trying to calm Moxie down after they got ribbed on and made look like goofballs. Now they're trying to calm down Moxie, but all of a sudden Pentagon and Fénix super kicks the Bucks. I'm like, why would they super kick the Bucks?
Because they don't like them.
They just said, okay, let's just hit these guys right now.
Yeah, it's like, these guys are trying to come in and take our thunder. Like, we're here. We're gonna be in the six-man with Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers. And, of course, the Young Bucks come in and they want to be the guys. I thought that was fine.
It just made no sense. If they would have had some kind of visual where it looked like the Young Bucks were going to set up a double super kick, or it felt like
that. But it's not like the Lucha Brothers are baby faces.
I know, but why would they? They're out there to say Moxley. Bucks are out there to calm Moxley down. Wouldn't they notice that they're just trying to calm him down? He's not being a threat to Moxley.
But they hate those guys, though. Like, they absolutely hate those guys. Like,
this makes no damn sense.
For the Lucha Brothers, why would they come out? A, like I said, the Moxley thing. And then that may not be the thing, but that's the only thing I could connect. Mm-hmm. But B, they're like, oh, like who, these Good Brothers guys, like who are these guys? Like, why are they on our show? Why, you know what? And so the problem is they don't cut English promos, but maybe someone will cut the promo for them.
It should be Pac, right? Makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? The Pac thing would have made total sense if he
came
out.
Because Pac's done with Eddie Kingston, in my
opinion. And they were teasing that Pac is one of the few guys to beat Kenny Omega when they were talking about him. Yeah. So, yeah, the Pac thing is probably the right way to go. But I do think the way that AEW books, whenever they set up matches, they make it sort of clear what the teams are going to be. And it's probably in 2 weeks, we're going to see Moxley and the Lucha Bros against...
I'm sure we'll get that. And then the Young Bucks will be like, Kenny, what happened? Why'd you do that to us? Oh, you know.
Well, you know what
they're going to do?
They're going to cause the Lucha Brothers to lose the match. That's what they're going to do. And then...
But they're not really going to join the Good Brothers. And
they're going to go off air. People are like, what's going to happen next?
This is Vince Russo-esque stuff right here.
I don't think it's
Russo. Oh, this is definitely... This is
stuff anywhere near
Vince Russo-esque stuff where a lot of shit just doesn't make any goddamn sense. And this is one of them. I was like, whoa, man, this is just, I couldn't believe this segment. I had something else in my number one dislike, and I had to knock that one down because I saw this, and I was like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. Once Luke Gallows did the bumble of the top rope for fucking Griff Garrison and Brian Pillman Jr., I was like, are you seriously? I just posted today, because whoever wrote that thing, they said something about this is how the Horsemen do it, and I just found something from 1991, not even the best Horsemen group. Where like Sid and Flair and Wyndham just kick the shit out of these job guys. Sid Vicious ain't doing a fucking bump over the top rope for job guys, right? They stretched them out. You know, Sid was doing the stretcher gimmick. They get multiple powerbomb one dude. I'm like, this is how they should have done it. They should have kicked the shit out. Oh my God, these fucking Good Brother guys. Now they were the Mega. Oh my God, what's going to happen? Instead of, you know, we gotta get Daniel Lyon or something because we like him. Like, fuck. You know, not today, you know, later.
All right. What did you, what is another like?
I had another one. I had Serena Deeb and Ty Conti as a like. I thought, you know, Serena Deeb did a tremendous job with Conti and had a good match. You know, it wasn't great or anything, but it was good, watchable match. I thought it was, you know, Serena Deeb's definitely, you know, I enjoy watching her do her thing. She's tremendous.
That's why she's there, for one. And secondly, I know a lot of people were like, oh, you know, Ty Conti did such a better job. And she was obviously improved, but it was a complete Serena Deeb match.
Yeah, that, Bret Hart, Tom McGee in a way, you know.
That's what it was. You know, though, it is actually pretty cool to see what you could do with Conti if she's sort of motivated and if she's interested in that kind of style. The problem is that they don't have anybody else other than Serena Deeb to do that. So the next time Conti has a match that's not with Serena Deeb, it's not going to be as good.
No.
And it was a good match, but the whole time I'm thinking like, okay, this is the best that Conti can do. And then they're going to get some confidence in her, and then she's going to get in a match with Chris Statlander, and then it's going to be like, what the hell's going on?
It'd be a train wreck for sure. Yeah. That Conti, I mean, her rep is that, you know, she's just, she's not, you know, not motivated, you know, not, you know, kind of a whiner. So we'll see. I mean, but, you know, she needs leaders in there.
She may have learned her lesson, though, at the same time, right? Like when you are in the top company and they spend a couple years with you and you come in with this jujitsu gimmick and you kind of look like a badass and you do not improve and then you make enemies and then they don't want anything to do with you. Like, if she is of value as a pro wrestler, that in of itself should shape her into being a better employee, right? Just that happened. Like they were like, okay, no, we're done with you. Go somewhere else because you're more valuable to us off the roster than you are on the roster. Like that's a pretty big thing.
I think WWE, I think they were just packing her bags for her, but you know, from what I'm hearing from the AEW side, it's kind of some similar stuff is happening with her. But you know, she's young.
Well, I mean, that's that kind of, that, I mean, that sucks because yeah, then it yeah, means that she didn't really learn her lesson.
Yeah, I mean, she's young too, and she wasn't like a, you know, I don't think she was a fan. So you know, a lot to learn and stuff. But yeah, they need more senior deebs for sure in that roster to really helps a lot of these girls, and it, you know, she's sensational. I kind of wish she wouldn't be the
NWA. Get Molly Holly to come out of retirement.
I just wish they wouldn't, you know, get rid of this NWA title stuff and just put the belt on her. I I'm kind of tired of Sheeta. You know, we've seen that forever now. I think it's time to go with Deeb. At least you have a quality, you know, you're going to have a good quality leader in there for mm-hmm. those title matches.
Okay, so my last like was the ending to Darby Allin and Cage. You know, the beating that that poor dude took was a little hard to watch at times, mm-hmm. but there's still something compelling about him as a character when he's taken that, you know, now at the same time, I am very aware that he should not be taking as much punishment as he did to get over with the crowd or to get that sympathy. But there still is something about his personality, something about his character where you just kind of want to see him pull out the win at the end, right? Like he has whatever that is as a babyface, he has that. And I thought the finish was pretty creative. I thought Cage looked about as good as humanly possible as he could in a match like this where he's going to lose to a small dude. But yeah, I was more so compelled by Darby's ability to get sympathy and to get, you know, that sort of story of, I just kind of want to see him pull this match out. And like, I don't really get that into matches, I would say, to where I'm just like rooting like that. And there's a few wrestlers who will do it. Like Daniel Bryan always does it for me where I'm like, God, I really want to see him win. And I'm not exactly sure why. That was kind of what I was with Darby in this match. And I thought the finish was creative, a little bit of a callback. But overall, I thought his the beating that he took was probably pretty unnecessary. But, you know, I was still pulling for him at the end.
Well, yeah, he doesn't need to do all that stuff anymore. He's, you know, he's popular with that crowd. He can kind of I didn't understand. Was this a no disqualification match?
I don't know.
Me neither. So like when Paige just like slams him through the
tables and stuff,
I'm just like, well, is that a disqualification? But it's funny, no one even says anything about that. Just, oh my God, he crashed through the table. But then when Darby Allin takes his belt off and wraps around Brian Cage's legs in the middle of the ring, Jim Ross is having a conniption fit about it. What is that? You know, like, I don't think Jim Ross really liked this match.
He was doing his Yano.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was just, I wasn't, I just don't think how this really got Cage over that much. Like, he did everything in the world to this little guy. He's 100 pounds bigger, and the guy's kicking. These guys kicking out at one a lot of times. Like, I'm just like, I just don't understand what the point of that it was. I know just to show, you know, never give up, Darby Allin, but it's whatever.
I wonder what comes out of this match is if finally we get a little bit of Ricky Starks and Brian Cage feud, because Starks was there and he was supposed to help, and then Sting came out and Starks didn't help, and that's what caused Cage to lose the match. I wonder if there's going to be some static with those guys.
I wouldn't think so right now. I think there'd be some tag matches coming up, maybe with I guess Sting would be wrestling on in a tag match of some sort. I don't know what he can do. I mean, he just didn't do much here. He finally did something, at least. That was a positive.
I'm sick of the lights off gimmick. Let's stop doing that now.
He's 60, man. He's not going to be fucking running out. That was a jump cut, for sure. Obviously a jump cut. I mean, this is a tape show. There's a lot of cuts and matches, I thought. Like the Jungle Boy, Margaret Stunt, FTR match had a weird jump cut at one point or two. I thought that was interesting. But yeah, Sting, I mean, I don't know. There's another thing that cracked me up is that Taz goes to the play-by-play booth, right? He says that it's unfair because Team Taz has so many people that Will Hobbs is not going to be out there, but they still have Ricky Starks and Hook out there. Like, how fair is it still? You still got
I didn't guys. Like the fact that Hook was out there and not Hobbs.
I like the fact that we all we know about Hook is that he's Taz's kid. You know, like, who is this kid? Like, can you kind of explain what he doesn't look like much. He's in a sweater. He's kind of just, you know, just I want to give some kids some presentation at least. And yeah, I don't know. I didn't make my likes or dislikes. I wasn't really into it. It was
all right. What is your first dislike?
Or
your second dislike?
The Inner Circle segment.
Yeah. I knew this was going to be on your list.
Well, this was my main one at first. I was like,
I have a little bit of a rebuttal to it, but I didn't like it either. I just didn't hate it.
It just, here we go. You know, and you know how many groups argued on this show? Like, you noticed that? Like, we had, well, the Elite, they have issues. Adam Page of the Dark Order, who knows the hell they're doing. Matt Hardy and Party City have issues.
I want to talk about that one in a second.
And now Inner Circle, you know, they continue to have issues after their, you know, town hall where they're all going to come together and yay. And I don't know. It was really exciting to see, okay, MJF, Jericho, what are they going to do? And it's just like by week, it just loses more and more interest. I just think they had no clue what to do with the Inner Circle during all this other stuff they had planned. It just seems like they're just, you know, keeping involved their own little thing.
Okay, so here's why it wasn't on my dislike list. Because it looked like they were trying to do something a little different with the segment, maybe a little bit more of like off the top of their heads, a little bit of like less scripted. And so I enjoyed that part of it because it didn't feel super scripted. Now, some people may say this is exactly why you script stuff, but that I enjoyed sort of the experiment to that. And I do think there were some cool things that where guys kind of had to be on their toes. I thought Wardlow was on his toes. I thought Swagger or Hager was on his toes.
He only said one thing.
Well, he kept saying it, right? Championships. Like, that was kind of his thing. Actually, Jericho and MJF, I thought, needed to actually carry this thing in order for it to be strong, because look, they both have experience in this, right? Like, I'm not saying Jericho's the greatest actor, improv comedian, but he actually has some training in it. And MJF, we know, is a performer. I thought it needed to be a little bit stronger with those guys, but I did enjoy the attempt, because when I saw them out there, I thought, oh, we're going to see this again. They're going to do the same scripted thing. You know who I thought were the best ones was Santana and Ortiz. They're not there to say much, but when they do, they really hit their punchlines really well. But yeah, you know, it wasn't a home run in any way, but I did think it was a nice attempt to try and do something a little bit different. They just didn't do a great job with it.
Yeah, and then I like the idea of that Jericho and MGF were teaming, and this had caused some dissension with Pride and Powerful, and of course Sammy, and even Jake Hager, because he was just teaming with Jericho. But they could at least, here's something that you can really stretch out and really plant the seeds from week to week to finally lead to something like a big three-way tag team match or whatever. It's just, I didn't mind the presentation of it. I just hear there's argument. I want to see them do some other things with other people. I want to see them be a solid unit, and then just slowly chip at that foundation that they all came together for that town hall, and slowly break apart again and again to where you're finally like, oh man, I can't wait to see this implode. And just, but they just, I mean, if they keep doing it week to week, now they're wrestling each other. What's the, when it finally does explode, like, how exciting is it going to be? Cause we've already seen them wrestle. We've already seen them argue every week. So
the one flaw I thought was, why do Hagar and Wardlow have to be a part of this? If they already fought last week, they already got it out of their system. Why do they have to be a part of this tag thing?
They're not teaming.
No, but they're involved. Like, Sammy and Hagar are in a match together, or in the match together as a team.
Yeah.
And then Wait, is Wardlow teaming?
No, it's just gonna be.
Oh, so he's out. So he's not in it at all.
No, because there's seven of them. So there's right. Jericho, MJF, Sammy.
I guess that kind of makes sense. But still, I didn't think like the whole thing was like these guys already got it out of their system. So now we have to get it out of our system. Well, then why is Hagar still in it? Like that was kind of confusing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this thing, which I thought was the worst thing on the show.
The Britt Baker segments, are you going to say?
No. I didn't hate that. I did think it was a swing and a miss, but I really liked the attempt. It's just, we'll talk about that when we get there. But the thing that I hated the most was the private party segment with Matt Hardy. And the reason why is I feel like there was some time warp and we missed 3 months of storyline.
That's like with everything they do.
Like all of a sudden, Matt Hardy's their manager.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. I don't know. I thought there could have been a cool Barry Bloom joke in here somewhere. But what manager takes 30% from talent? I don't think that exists. So basically, what you're telling me is Private Party, even though they're already signed with AEW, mm-hmm. they are so green that they need to hire Matt Hardy to then take 30% of their money because they are goofballs and they're not good enough.
Yeah, because please, stupid. This whole thing was a waste of time.
And look, I think they're trying to show off a little bit of personality. I get it. They're not good at it. You know what they're good at? It's like doing crazy moves, and that's really about it right now. But the whole thing, I'm like, okay, I thought I was supposed to like Matt Hardy, not think that he's just this gigantic dick for stealing money from young tag team.
He's been a heel for like after that match he had the compound. Ever since then, he's been doing this, I guess.
Is it because he has a concussion? Is that why he's acting weird? I don't know.
Like, no one cared about him after. No one cared about him. He said no one cared about him after his match with Sammy, even though everyone did. And he came out and he cut a promo about how grateful he was for AEW and everyone, his family. But all of a sudden now people didn't care about him when he got hurt with Sammy. So who knows? They don't.
It's funny. I saw a quote from Jeff Hardy, who was like, oh man, when I saw him hit his head and then it took a little bit of while for him to get up. And then I was like, man, that's crazy. But you know what? That's the wrestling business. Or he said something like that. I'm like, no way. In whose wrestling business do you need to get a concussion and just be okay with that? I was like, oh my God, only the Hardy brothers.
Yeah. And then like, are we supposed to have sympathy for the Party City for signing a bad contract that they signed and should looked over, you know? Yeah, this was a big hit.
I think they're supposed to be dumb, and I don't like that. I don't like the dumb green tag team getting screwed over. Look,
or the white guy taking advantage of two young black athletes.
Sure, like you can look at it that way too. But it's like we understand the we're supposed to be a smart audience. And maybe I know a little bit more than this, but like, you know, I know what NBA agents make versus the salary. It's not 30%. You know, I don't know if the 30% is supposed to like, it's like, oh, taxes are 30% or whatever. So that's why it's like, no, it doesn't make any sense. Like, what does Barry Bloom make it wasn't Bret Hart. Who was the one that used Barry Bloom as his agent? Yeah, I think Jesse was the first one, but there was a couple other guys who were like pretty that pissed Vince off because they had agents. And, you know, I don't know what he made, 4%, 6%, not 30%.
Well, I don't think Matt Hart's ever had an agent, so maybe he doesn't know what they really make, you know?
Come on.
So, I mean, you think Tony Khan would kind of know because he deals with agents for soccer stuff, I would think, right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just
the Jaguars just signed Urban Meyer to be their head coach. I'm sure Urban Meyer
probably debut next week.
Got a lot of money from Shad Khan there. Okay. So give me all of your dislikes and I'll kind of tell you why I didn't fully think they were bad, even though I don't think they hit the mark.
Well, the last thing I have is Britt Baker, the Cody segment. I like Britt Baker. I like her whole, you know, her presentation. I like her. I like her when she's not wrestling. I think she's, yeah. I say that many times. Like, she's a great, she'd be a great manager. This is good. Like, having her, having a segment like this is good for her. But after she insults Cody before he comes out, Cody just comes out smiling, having a good old time. Apparently that behind that door is a soundproof room. Because he didn't.
There's no green room. There's no green room for Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, there's no green room. And then, of course, Jade Cargill comes out. The woman who broke his wife's arm. Remember that storyline that was dropped? And
she pilmanized her arm.
Yeah. And he's still smiling. Like, wouldn't he just be kind of a little pissed or kind of like, you know, have a little issue with you? Like, some kind of mean face and show some serious business. And he just says no promo, nothing to Jay. He just sits there and just kind of like smiles. And now comes, you know, now she want, not, so her, what, her and Shaq now, they want a match, right? Or Shaq,
she don't want to wait anymore.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they don't want to wait anymore.
They don't want to wait. She wants a match, and here comes Velvet Cake, or what's her name?
Red Velvet.
Sorry, Velvet Cake. I wrote down Velvet Cake. Comes out, and they get in a slap fest. Now, there's a big height and size difference between these two ladies. When I would think when Jade Cargill slaps Red Velvet, Velvet Cake in the face, you would think she'd go down, right? But she just kind of sits there, and here comes all the AWB team women roster comes out to separate them. And I'm just like, what the heck's going on? And then all of a sudden, here comes this promo from Thunder Rosa in her house, cutting this promo about their match coming up on, was it February 3rd at the Beach Blast or whatever it's called. Like, they pack so much, and like, it took away from what we just saw. Even though it was shit, it just took away from that. Maybe it was supposed to be there to make us forget this horrible segment. But like, what are we supposed to end thinking about at the end of each that segment? Are we thinking about Jade Cargill and Velvet Cake? Or are we going to think about, you know, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker? Or both? But to me, at the end, I'm just thinking about Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. I kind of already wiped out. See, I think they could have separated us two, or at least done the announcement of Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker next week. Would have been a perfect time to do it.
Yeah. So, it was definitely a train wreck. The reason why I didn't put it on my dislikes is because I thought it was very brave of them and very brave of Britt to go out there on a live mic and do stand-up comedy for, I don't know, it was like 2 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever, because that is really hard. And all of her jokes didn't hit. There was a couple of chuckles that she got out of me because I thought her delivery was actually kind of cute. But you could see she was a little nervous, like she was talking a little fast. But to put her and to give her control of that mic and to have Rebel or Reba behind her, I thought that was really cool. Someone had mentioned, I think it was Paul Fontaine had mentioned, what is the Alexa Bliss segment that she does, that they sort of do something similar with Alexa Bliss. I haven't seen that, or I probably have seen it, but I haven't watched
something little
Raw in a while.
Like that, or
yeah,
that.
Yeah, whatever it's called. But I did think it was really cool to have her actually doing stand-up comedy, because you don't even see that like in late night, right?
I mean,
in
it's late night, like, it's a couple all dudes. Lines. I mean, it's like
no. But I thought it was a cool look.
It's not to give have her the award for best comedy.
No. You don't put someone like that who is still sort of inexperienced in that thing. And I thought she did a pretty good job. Now, I think the Cody thing was like
a waste.
He's just sort of like, you know, maybe a little embarrassed, maybe a little surprised, but that's suit Cody. That wasn't like Cody, the American Nightmare wrestler. That was like Cody, the suit, and Cody, the suit on TV acts a little bit differently. So they may have to explain the two different characters there, 'cause he didn't do anything. I don't even know why he was there.
It was just, I think it was just a, I guess being the extension of the old angle into the new angle, but yet you know, Velvet is part of the Nightmare family. They have, you know, that group that, you know, they have. That's the only group that's not fighting each other, which is nice. then again, they're not really on TV that much, so we don't get to see it. Maybe they're fighting on Dark. I don't know.
Well, so I guess the other thing, you know what that was missing? I think what would have made a lot of sense is if somebody said, I don't know who would have said it, but somebody would have said, we got to cut from this. And then they show the video and then they tell that story. But like you said, why did they have to do it on that show? They could have done it on a different show. But I think if someone would have said, you know, this is too chaotic, we got to cut, someone cut to something, and then they show that video, then it makes a little bit more sense. But to just throw that video on while all the chaos is going on, it didn't make any sense whatsoever.
No. It took away from it. And you could have saved it for next week. Or I felt like they just rushed this because look at that horrible, you know, video that Thunder Rosa made. You know, like I'm guessing.
Yeah, her promo is not that good.
No, it was all, you know, in the background is her wrestling pictures and her house or whatever hell. And it's like, I don't know. They could have done that. Send some kind of a production crew out there to kind of film some more of a cooler video of her cutting this promo. I mean, and then I didn't know that, you know, Britt Baker did not want to wrestle Thunder Rosa. They never made that clear, did they? I don't know. All of a sudden, I don't know. I told you, Tony, I didn't want to wrestle.
Maybe it was on Dark, because I guess that's where she did that segment a couple times, was on Dark.
Yeah, she's practiced this segment on Dark. They tried it out there, which is, you know, it's good on them. I would do the same thing, something like this. And no, she, like, Britt's great. She's, like I said, I like her character. I think she does a really good job. In the ring, that's a whole nother story, but we'll see. We'll see when she wrestles Thunder Rosa on February 3rd at the, is that the cruise thing? Is that the Jericho?
No, it's just their beach blast show.
I thought it was a Jericho COVID cruise. That's what I thought it was going to be. Is that still going on?
No, he had to cancel that.
He canceled it. Oh, good.
Well, now postponed it.
Yeah, that's good. Cause that's a little scary, you know? Yeah. Not the time for a bunch of people on a boat, you know?
No, I mean, I wonder if they could even do it. Like, I mean, Florida is pretty much Wild Wild West, but I do wonder if they could actually do cruises. I don't know what, I would assume you can't do cruises, but who knows? I hope not. I hope you can't do cruises. Okay, so I guess that is it. If that was your last dislike.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think the what happened on Wednesday with you know, with Trump and stuff like that has been kind of killing the buzz on some of this stuff the last 2 weeks, and then now we're gonna have the inauguration, which will probably create a little bit more chaos on next Wednesday when they both have these shows again. I hope that there's gonna be some semblance of normalcy soon after all of this stuff is done. But man, you know, it's kind of the thing that's out there that people are really paying attention to. It's not a fun thing to follow. It's not positive in any way. And it just kind of kills my buzz for some of this stuff. But, you know, the shows have been okay. So I think we said last week, I come into it going like, oh, you know, this is crazy stuff. And then I come out of it going like, okay, like the shows were interesting. And so I feel a little bit better coming out of it. And that's kind of what entertainment is for. So
yeah.
I hope that they do get a little bit of a break though. I think next week we're probably going to feel similarly though, because of the inauguration and everything that's going to happen Wednesday. You know, it's going to happen Wednesday. There's a crazy UFC show early that day too on Wednesday. Not that that's going to have anything to do, but there's Wednesday just all of a sudden feels busy now. So check us out if you want to on our Patreon. We are going to talk about some 1997 Raw on Monday. We're going to talk about the Royal Rumble 97 and then the following Raw, which is some of that stuff was pretty darn good.
with
the main event guys, like, just God, it just felt hot. Like, it's like, this is what wrestling feels like when it's hot again. And so we'll talk about that stuff on Monday on our part two of our Fight Game podcast as we follow Monday Night Raw 1997. So for John, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.